So I think it was good. We finished Chazak Chazak Minis Chazek on the Pshia. It's nice to have that behind us. So I think we should pick up our pace a little bit for the next 2 months or whatever it is. So the plan for today is to talk about the Kushra Dichiyusa discussion on Sadi Gimel. Very nice self-contained discussion about these intangible value. And then I think I want to spend about a week on this question of a socher being like a shomer sachar. It came up on Tzadi Gimel Amid Aleph, whether a socher is a shomer chinam or a shomer sachar. Does that sound good to you guys? That we could, I mostly want to focus on, my father has an interesting article on this. I have to dig it up. I'll send it around. So we'll use that. We could use that as the basis for our discussion. That sound good? It's like a nice, it's an important thing about the nature of a shomer, of a socher. Okay, so we'll do that. And then from there, we'll talk about Masna Masha Kasa B'Torah B'Davar Shel Mamon, Masna Shomer Chinam Lios Kishoel, the Mishnah on Sadi Dalid. And that'll take us till the end of the parak. So we'll do that. And then we'll move into HaShoel and talk about the status of a shoel by Levimo. Some of the nice sugyas that come up there in the beginning of HaShoel. Sounds like a plan? Great. Excellent. So let's get started here on our discussion today. So we have the Gemara on Sadi Gimel on the base. Let me just remind everybody what the Gemara was talking about. So the Gemara said, you have a shomer. The shomer was supposed to fend off some lion that was attacking the flock. He should have sounded the alarm to get the other shepherds on board to help him save the flock. He should have gone to the armory to take the sticks to fend off the lion, whatever it is. And if he fails to do so, he's chayiv. And the Gemara says, wait a second, what's the difference between a shomer chinam and a shomer sachar? So the Gemara tells us this very important difference. Gabe, did you get a chance to see this, Gemara? Did you get a chance to prepare this, Gabe?
Yeah, so the Gemara says that the Shomer Chinam should cast volunteers, but he's not obligated to put money on the line out of pocket to bring other people to help, but a Shomer Sachar is a responsibility.
Exactly. So the Gemara draws this important difference between the Shomer Chinam and the Shomer Sachar. They both have a duty to save the flock, but they have different types of obligations. The Shomer Sachar is held to a higher standard in that he's supposed to advance cash, advance payment for the owner. A Shomer Chinam is not expected to do so. So I just thought this is a very interesting example of another important difference between the Shomer Chinam and the Shomer Sachar, that L'chora does not tie directly into Gneva Vaveda versus Pshia. At least I think, right? We're just saying that sounds like maybe this is Pshia for both of them, but the corresponding duty of the Shomer Sachar is more burdensome. It's a stronger type of obligation. It imposes more on the Shomer Sachar than on the Shomer Chinam, even though this difference does not appear to reduce to Gneva versus Pshia. You guys agree with that formulation? That seem right?
Yeah, I mean, the Rambam says it's Pshia as well, which kind of supports this.
Yeah, that's good, right? The Rambam calls this Pshia. Gabe, is that what you were going to say?
No, you could minimize the import of this difference and just say it's a reflection of the preferences of the Baal Beim.
You mean like, oh, this is like an implied something that he wants when he hires you?
Yeah, clearly the owner of the Shomer Chinam animal isn't willing to put money on the line to protect the animal, whereas the owner of the one who hired the Shomer Sachar was willing to put some money down.
Oh, I don't think that's right. I don't think that's right at all, because for sure it would be in the rational interest of the owner in a Shomer Chinam case to pay $20 to save his $200 dog, right? I think if anything, the Gemara here is really just about the preferences, about the fairness of imposing the financial liability of advancing the cash on the shomer. And on a Shomer Sachar who's paid, we're fully comfortable imposing that burden on him. For a Shomer Chinam, we're not willing to. That's how I read the Gemara. Make sense, Gabe? So I'll take Evan, I'll take your hand. Just let me say one more point that. So I think on the most elementary level, this Gemara is very important in establishing another difference between Shomer Chinams and Shomer Sachar. Evan?
Yeah, the difference in this sort of like preference or I guess not a preference, but in the difference between which Shomer Chinam and Shomer Sachar is that just because like there's kind of like money in the piggy bank for Shomer Sachar, or is it more related to the sort of din slash expectation value of their shmira? Like,
yeah, I think for sure the second thing. The second thing, meaning it's not like, oh, he's being paid, so he's liquid and has cash available. It's that, no, he's being paid, so he's held to a higher standard of shmira. Part of that higher standard is to spend money to save the thing. That's how I understand the Gemara. Yeah, good, but good, very, very good clarification. So then the Gemara says, Yad Kama, right? How much is the Shomer Sachar supposed to advance in saving the animals? Okay, so what does the Gemara say? Yakir, you want to take us through this line, Yad Kama?
Sure. So the Gemara says, Yad Kama, Akedei Demehen. So he advanced up to the value of the animals.
Yeah. And at this point, the Gemara doesn't know it's advancing, so as it say?
So how could it be that he's going to pay out of pocket? It's going to end up that he ends up losing out due to an onus, which makes him chayv onsin in a certain sense.
Right, meaning in effect, if he's chayv to pay up to their value to save them from an onus type situation, right?
Right.
So what is the Gemara answer?
Gemara finds that surprising. So Gemara says Rav Shakal demand of Al-Bias that he can recoup his expenses.
Yeah. So it's just about advancing the money. He can recoup it from the Al-Bias. And I guess the Chiddush is more that a Shomer Chinam is not expected to advance the cash, even though he'd be able to recoup it. Right? That's the difference here. So we're going easy on the Shomer Chinam. We think it's unfair to even put him on the hook in the interim to cover the costs of saving the thing. Okay, so that's the first part of the Gemara. And now things turn interesting with Rav Papa's objection. So Yakir, take us through this. Amalei Rav Papa.
So if he is able to recoup his expenses, then what interest would the Baal Bayis have in having him pay the entire value of the animals? Just to save the animals, the Baal Bayis doesn't end up gaining anything from this exercise.
Right. So the thought is this is like an irrational principle. If we're going to force the Baal Bayis to spend $200 to save $200 animals, right? It's yatsa schara b'hefseido, literally. So now we get to the crucial line. So what's the Gemara's answer?
So the Gemara assumes that the Baal Bayis would still have an interest in the Shomer carrying this out for one of two reasons, either because these animals are more valuable to him than new animals because they're already trained and familiar to him, or because of the extra effort involved in buying new animals.
Yeah, great. I think these are just two ways of like pointing to transaction costs, right? Even though the market value is $200, but there are these hidden costs, the transaction costs of either the tircha of having to go to the market to find new animals, or the transaction costs of having to train these animals, right, the new ones. So there's the added benefit that makes it rational for the Baal Bayis to spend $200 to save animals worth $200 because he saves these hidden costs. Fair? Yeah, like we all know, like you sell a house for $1 million, there are all these fees associated with the sale. There's taxes, there's brokerage costs, blah, blah, blah. So like the market price is different from the actual value you'll recover. All right? Okay. So, great. That's the Gemara's Lekusha Dichiyusa or Letircha Yisersa. Now, in the Gemara itself, what sense do you get that, what role is Lefi Pashtas, Lekusha Dichiyusa and Tircha Yisersa playing? So what substantive role is it playing?
I mean, all it's doing, like the most minimal, is that it's justifying the roeh to, it's obligating the roeh to defend the flock, even if the cost will equal the cost of the whole flock.
Yeah.
That's all it's doing. It's answering the question of maya hani, is it what possible benefit? We're just trying to find shum hana.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Meaning it's about irrational decision-making, about practical decision-making issues. And the Gemara's point is that it's still rational for the Baal HaBayis to cough up this amount of money to save them, and that's why we impose the obligation on the Shomer. Right? Yeah. And then you turn to the Rambam. So let's just read the second half of the Rambam here. Rambam says you have a chiyuv to save, blah, blah, blah. V'im lo asa kein, v'hoya lo liskor, v'lo sachar, hareza posheya v'chayev. So suppose you're a Shomer Sachar. You were supposed to save, you're supposed to advance $100 or $200 to save the $200 animals, and you didn't do so. So you're considered posheya, and therefore you're chayiv. Lefi pashtus in the Rambam, how much are you chayiv in this case?
Entire flock.
Yeah, for the entire value of the animals, right? The Rambam says chayiv, he doesn't specify, so presumably you're chayiv for the full amount. Interesting also, the Rambam says that this is pshia. This touches on what we saw earlier. Even though a shomer chinam is really not obligated to advance money, it's a special chiyuv of the shomer sachar. And the Rambam seems to characterize this as pshia nonetheless. So I want to point out there's an interesting debate in the Achronim. I don't want to get us dragged into this. I'll just gesture at it. The tumim in Simon Samach Vav points to this Rambam and says, Hare de yesh lefanecha pshia de isa b'shomer sachar v'lasa b'shomer chinam. Just wants to point out, like, look, there's a category of pshia that exists for uniquely for shomer sachar that's not considered pshia for a shomer chinam. Which is an important observation, right? We've been on the lookout for this, is the idea that a shomer sachar is chayiv for Gneva Veda while Shomer Chinam is chayiv for Pshia, or is the idea that we define Pshia differently for a Shomer Sachar than for a Shomer Chinam. With the Tumim Ziyak, the point here seems to be that there are unique Pshia things that are, there are things that are uniquely defined as Pshia specifically for Shomer Sachars. Sachar, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I think kind of we might be dealing with two different kinds of things. I think earlier in the year, we've been discussing maybe we just, for the Shomer Sachar, we redefine Pshia to cover a broader spectrum of liability. And just that entire spectrum is Pshia for him. I think this is actually kind of going in a orthogonal direction, that there's different, just separate obligations that don't fall under degrees of risk, that just the Shomer Sachar is obligated to do. There's just other duties that he has to do. And if he fails in those duties, he's negligent. So I think this is actually kind of, in some sense, is really interesting because it's just totally orthogonal that the Shomer Chinam has nothing comparable. But on the other hand, it doesn't really change, help us in our previous discussion of how do we look at the spectrum of Pshia, Gneva, Veda, we expand it, contract it, kind of thing.
I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. So what you're saying is that earlier we were choker whether is Gneva Veda just a type of Pshia for a Shomer Sachar, right? And this, especially the Tumim's point, seems to be saying, no, Gneva Aveda is Gneva Aveda for a Shomer Sachar, right? But there are other things that still might be considered Pshia for a Shomer Sachar, but not for a Shomer Chinam. I agree with that, Hara, 100%. And I also agree with that, so that makes this all the more interesting as a category. Yeah, great. And you can have like real nafkamina, by the way. Like, so for example, for all the Rishonim who said Chilasa Begneva Veda Sofa Baonas is Pater, you might say for this Chilasa Bipshia of a Shomer Sachar, even though it's a unique pshia for a shomer sachar, sofa bonis might be chayiv, right? Interesting nafkamina to consider.
I mean, so, isn't that explicit in the Gemara? Isn't the whole point of the Gemara that he is chayiv? He doesn't.
Yeah.
As in this pshia, for not getting the thing. I mean, they might not even think it counts as sofa bonus, though.
Yeah, right. So I don't know if you could be medayik from this Gemara, but the nafkamina, I think, is very important. It's not sure you'd have a raya from this case. Okay, so that's the Rambam. And the Rambam seems to make sense, right? Do you guys think this makes sense? So he's supposed to spend $100 to save the $200 animals. He fails to do so. So now he's chayiv to pay the value of the animals, the value of the loss, which is $200. Correct? Okay. Now enters the Ravid. The Ravid's very upset by this. Evan, do you have a chance to prepare the Ravid? Not yet? Okay, Shmuel, do you have a chance to prepare the Ravid? Okay, so just read the Ravid here.
Omer Avram, Davar Zeh Tzarech Perish. She'inu Mashalim Kol Dmei HaBehemos. So he shouldn't have to pay the entire value of the animals. Ela Me'inichin Lo HaSchar She'hai Tzarech L'Schor HaRoim L'Hatzil. Rather, we assess how much he would have had to pay all these extra roim and to pay for the sticks to save the animals.
So first you assess how much he would have expended on saving the animal. And then what do you do with that? Menachim lo. So what does that mean?
That's what he has to pay.
Not that that's how much he has to pay, that you deduct that amount from his liability, right? So if the animals are worth $200 and it would have cost him $100 to save them through sounding the alarm and hiring the roim, b'chule, then the net liability of the shomer is how much, Shmuel?
So what were the numbers, 100 and 200?
The animals are worth 200, it would have cost him 100 to save them.
Yeah, so then 100.
Yeah, so why is that? Why does the Ravid think that? Why does the Ravid think that you deduct what he would have paid to save the roim, even when he didn't do that? What's the argument?
Because he would have only had he done what was proper, he would have only paid that much. He wouldn't have had to pay 200 to save the animals. So his pshia was the fact that he didn't pay the original 100.
His pshia is that he didn't pay the original 100. Okay, I would formulate it a little differently. Anybody else want to take a different stab at it, Shmuel, or you want to take a minute to... How would you reformulate that?
I would just say that the way Shmuel just phrased it, if, let's say, the alarm and whatnot costs $50, those two values would have different amount, right? The amount the Shomer Sachar would have paid would have been 50, but the amount he would have, like, quote unquote, saved if he had done that would have been 150.
And so then those two numbers. Who would have saved?
If the Shomer Sachar would have saved, he would have saved the $200 animal minus the cost of $50, $150 net.
$150 net for whom?
For the Baal, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And so it's that one. Right, and so it's that $150. So it's not that $150 that is deducted, right? It's the $50 that's deducted.
Correct. Meaning you deduct the cost of saving, and you only pay the net saving that the Baal HaBayis would have had.
Right.
The amount the Baal HaBayis would have saved net had you done the right thing. Right. So the idea is that the animals are worth 200. It would have cost $50 to save them. The Baal HaBayis would have had to foot the bill of $50. So what's the Baal HaBayis's net loss now that you didn't do the right thing? What's the net loss of the pshia? $150. Because in any event, the Baal HaBayis would have been out $50 for the saving costs. That seems to be the argument, right? Okay. So that's a really interesting view, right? And notice it's not clear in the Ravid if he's saying davar zeh tzarech perish. Does he think the Rambam thinks this, or is his point that the Rambam just says chayiv and the Rambam doesn't tell us the amount of chayiv? So the Rav is just saying, look, let's explicate the Rambam's view, or is he disagreeing? I think this is a very just important issue for all the Nezikin cases. When the Gemara says Chayiv, is that like separate from the question of like how much you're liable to pay? Right? There's like two separate questions, the fact of your liability and the amount of your liability. So it's an interesting background point for all these Gemara cases. Whenever it says Chayiv, does it mean like the full market value, or is it sensitive to the fact that there could be other considerations that would mitigate the amount of collection? Like in these two ways of reading the Ravid here. So do you guys find the Ravid's theory compelling, that you don't pay the full the damages is not $200, but rather $150? What do you guys think? It's a good argument, bad argument, Gabe?
Yeah, I'm wondering if somebody can motivate the other view, because this seems pretty reasonable.
I mean, what would be the Rambam view, quote unquote, right? So you're saying the Ravid view is obvious, because why should the shomer ever have to pay more than the net damages that the Baal HaBayis would have lost had he acted properly, right? Interesting. I think the counter argument is, sure, had you acted properly, right? That's what the Baal HaBayis would have saved. But like, it's not like, why should, like in the actual world, where you were just lazy and didn't do your duty, you allow these things to be destroyed. So why should we give you a reduction based off like how much you would have paid, or how much the Baal HaBayis would have had to pay, in a world where you acted properly? See what I'm saying, Gabe? It's like, it's a question of like the accessibility of the nearby world where you did the right shmira. Is that the benchmark for determining your liability in this world? Or do we say like, no, like in this world, you were negligent. You caught, these sheep were destroyed. They're worth $200 and you got to pay that amount. Or is that not compelling, Gabe?
Sorry about the background noise. I'm going to split minds. I'm not convinced that that's the right reading. I think it's a question of like how we translate the word, how we think about this Poshea Kamazi theory. I think some of that is at play here. Because like, I would agree that if he sort of actively as Mazi damaged these animals, if he sort of went ahead and shechted them, then like he'd be on the line for the full value of the animal. But the Poshea Kamazi is a little bit more nuanced than just a regular piece of metal.
I think that's a really interesting thought. So you're saying, you know, if he shechted them, then it's just the value of the animals. But given that the liability here is really for a breach of shmira, so then like we have to factor in like the whole shmira package, right, including his right to be reimbursed. So that allows us to calculate just like the net damage. So it's an interesting thought that Gabe has, right? I think it's a really interesting view. I would say, Gabe, there's another thing that might bear on this. And I want to talk about the Dvar Avram first and then come back to explain how that would bear on this point. But a way of saying, just to preview it right now, the question is going to be, is the amount that the Shomer could recover, is that relevant for calculating net damages? As you're saying, Gabe, right? It's like, oh, because he's a shomer, that factors into his net damages, et cetera, et cetera. Or is the amount that he could recover really a separate consideration, almost of like shekenene, of like yored or mahane, in which case that's only something you could recover where you actually perform the service, right? It's not internal to calculation of damages, even on a Poshea Kamazik theory. It's two separate calculations going on. There's the damage to the sheep, $200. And then separately, oh, you did the Baal HaBayis an extra service that's worth $50. So you could recover that. But there's no reason why you should be able to recover that when you didn't actually perform the service. You see that, Gabe? I think that's going to be the...
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Okay, good. And the right, so you might say the Ravid is clearly thinking of this in terms of, oh, the service all gets wrapped into the calculation of poshea kemazik damages, right? So the net damages is the value of the sheep minus the what the service would have cost. And maybe the Rambam saying, no. The damages is clearly $200. It's offset by this accounting of the shekeinene amount owed from the Bailam to the Shomer. Okay, so we have hands from Zachariah and Evan. So let's take those two hands.
Yeah, so kind of on like a different angle than the, is the service included in what's going on here? I think something you can't say is you can't say that this is like a mana tvira tavar situation. Is that you don't look at this flock right now as only being worth $150. I think that's incorrect. I think the Shomer took Achrayas for $200 worth of material. Right now there are lions descending. So he has an option himself of spending $50 and protecting it. But I don't see how that would, if he fails to do so, I don't see how that mitigates against, number one, his initial Achrayas for the $200. Number two, their current state of not having, they haven't been lowered in value due to Ones. So I think like, unless you're going to say something fancy with, oh, the potential payback of the service is included in his chip. Like, unless you say something like that, then it's very internal to him. Certainly, klape the pikadon, I think the Rambam's position is compelling.
Yeah, I think that's true. Did we just lose someone?
Where'd he go?
That was crazy.
Mic drop.
I think instead of like unmuting, probably instead of unmuting himself, he like hit like leave meeting or something. But I see a little, maybe he'll come back in a second. I see a little white dot over there.
Oh. Yeah, sorry.
What happened? You accidentally left the meeting instead of
Alt A is unmute or mute, and apparently Alt S is leave meeting and delete Zoom from your computer.
Welcome back.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. It was just, I just have to like drop mic, you know?
Yeah. That's great. That's great. I think the response, Zachariah, is that along the lines that Gabe was suggesting, you have to distinguish maybe between damage to the pikadon, right? So Gabe was saying, yeah, if we're just interested in like is the nezek on the chefta, the value of the chefta is always $200. So if I shechted it, whatever, of course I'd pay $200. But maybe when you think of poshea kemazik, like you're liable for not so much the chefza, but for like your wrongdoing, right? So like how much is the value of your pshia here? Well, that factors in the cost, right? That you would have had to expend, or the balabais' cost in saving it, right? So the pshia is like, it's $150 worth of pshia. That's what I'm trying to say. And I think that's what Gabe was getting at in that formulation. Isn't that interesting? I think that's a very interesting view. But you see that, Zachariah?
Right. And his pshia was leaving $150 on the table.
So exactly. His pshia is not about the things being destroyed. His thing is about the pshia is on the $150 of like the decision-making error, right? That's the, yeah. Evan, you have a...
No, I was going to ask pretty much the same thing.
Okay, great. So, but you
agree? And I think it's I think it's a compelling answer. I think like the fact that it's the chiyuv of pshia, not like mazik, is what's really, you know, splitting the hairs here, or at least justifying a different type of payment.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yakir, you're going to take issue with your Harusa?
No, I think that maybe I'm more open than everyone else here to assume that this really is some, you know, part of the value is of the animals is bonus. There is sort of a mana tvira tavar situation going on here. Maybe we should view this as like the shomer is never really chayv, like the extreme opposite of the Dvar Avraham, that like it's the shomer is never chayev to pay out of pocket. He's only chayev to borrow from, you know, to migufan of the animals. to spend on saving the animals, and that naturally explains why it's capped at today the mayhem.
You're making like a reverse like short time Michale Migufo type theory, right? It's like there's a chiyuv hatzala miguf habehema, and then therefore the value of the behema somehow is lessened by, you know, its own response, like by the animal's worth less given that you could borrow off its value to save it.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. That's a very cool suggestion. It's like, a mortgaged house or something is worth less, right? Your equity in the house based off, by subtracting the amount you still owe to the bank, right? As opposed to just like, well, the asset on the free market is worth $1 million. No, but like your equity share is only 500,000 if you owe the bank 500,000. And so you're saying so too over here. It's like, when the lion comes and threatens the flock, so you could like borrow $50 from or up to the value of the behemoth to defend it, and that the animal loses its like true equity value, like in light of that. It's a very interesting point. Yeah, great thought. Okay, so let's move in now to the second point of the Ravid.
Quick question you raised earlier. The question
is, your camera like all smudged? What's going on? Why do you look like you're in Twilight Zone?
I'm using a new Zoom feature which blurs your background, but I'm also in front of a window, so I think the combination is working out that way.
you look like you have a hangover or something. Not that you, sorry, you don't look like you have a hangover.
Thank you.
Like the lens of your screen is like projecting like the hangover vision.
I think that might mean that you feel like you have a hangover.
yeah. That's right.
I'm just curious if you asked whether the Ravid agrees with the Rambam or is the Cholik on the Rambam here. Do you have any insight into the question? I thought the language of Tzarech Pirush sounds like he's explaining the Rambam, not disagreeing, and the Ravid definitely knows how to sound more confrontation, more combative than that.
Yeah. I like that reading of the Ravid, just because I'm working on this other piece. You saw I put into the chat the piece on contributory negligence. So it's a very interesting article. There's a follow-up piece on comparative negligence. So contributory negligence is where if the nizak is poshea, then the mazik doesn't have to pay anything. Comparative negligence is a little more complicated. It's where we reduce the liability of the mazik in proportion to the nizak's contribution of fault. But like the kasha against that view is like the Gemara doesn't really say that anywhere. The Gemara just says like chayiv pater. It doesn't say like chayiv 40%, chayiv 50%. So that I want to lean on this Ravid and say, well, the word chayiv is ambiguous sometimes, right? Chayiv in the Gemara just means that there's a basis for tashlumin without taking a stand on how much tashlumin is owed. So see that move? I think it's a good move. So I think this Ravid's very helpful in that, where he's saying, look, the word chayiv is always tzarech perish, right? How much? So to hear, chayiv doesn't mean the full amount of damage. It means really for the proportion of net damage caused by the shomer's pshia. So I like the perish reason, because it means that there's much more versatility in interpreting what the Gemara means by chayiv in cases. Yeah, I think you're right on that score. And as you say, the Ravid knows how to make a fuss about disagreeing with the Rambam when he wants to. Yeah. Great.
I should also say it's like a methodological thing with like Rambam versus like Balei Tosfos Ravid. Like Rambam will often kind of like just quote the Gemara straight, even if there might be other like details in the Psak involved. If the Gemara is not addressing them right here, assuming you could gather these kind of twists from other parts of Choshen Mishpat, he trusts someone to apply them properly. Choshen might just like jump in, like, oh, by the way, of course you're going to have to deduct, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, obviously, if you had a principled approach to the case, you'll apply other principles, but that's not what like
Exactly. It's like Divrei Torah, Niyim b'Makom Echad v'Ashirim b'Makom Acher. So, like, yeah, just apply the reduction rule or the comparative rule to this case of Chiyuv, 100%. Okay, so now we turn to the second part of the Ravid, which is arguably even more is more interesting than the first. So what does he say here? And this is a real Chiddush. So v'im oso aschar, I think Shmuel, weren't you taking us
through? Yeah. V'im oso aschar ola ad k'mei d'mehem. So if the amount that he would have had to pay to save them equals the value of the animals, umdim kama adam rotze litain, v'lo yitrach likno behema yafot keila. So we assess how much, I guess, the original owner would pay to buy, how much the original owner values sort of that tircha of buying animals of the same sort of yafa, and I guess training them and all of that. V'yishalim lo ha'omed, and we pay sort of the difference of that.
Yeah, who pays the difference?
The person who was poshea.
Exactly. sorry, Gabe. It's all about my underlining mood. You know, it's my underlining mood changes. But this is a really interesting point. Now, let me just say, somebody pointed this out to me. I must have mentioned this in the past. I wrote this article for the Beis Din. It's on the Jewish Prudence website about Schar Batala, Poel Batel, which is the amount somebody would pay to not have to do the heavy work. And I wrote this article with Cyril Klein, who was interning at the Beis Din. She's a law student at Harvard. And she pointed out, she had a very good ara, that there are different formulations in the Rishonim there. If it's how much a person would pay to not do the hard work, or how much a person would pay to, wait, is it how much a person would pay, yeah, to buy themselves out of the hard work?
What to not do?
Say it again, Evan.
What do you mean by buyout? Like to not do it? Like I'd pay X amount to not have to have it done.
Right. So it's like let's say you were gonna employ me for a really difficult job, right? To be an investment banker or something. So let's say I was getting $600,000 to be an investment banker, right? But I have like horrible hours. So it's how much less would I receive to have an easier job, right? So would I go down to, like $100,000 for a 9-to-5 job? So then the $500,000 difference is what gets deducted in a Poel Batel calculation. Okay. That's one formulation, which is like how much less would I be willing to receive? And then some of the Rishonim, like, say, I think Rashi uses both formulations, like, how much would a person pay to get more vacation time? So it's like, how much would I pay to not have to work the crazy investment banking hours? Now, Gabe will tell us that in standard economics, right, it's the same amount. In classical economics, it's the same amount, right? Because the amount I should be willing to forego is the amount that I should be willing to pay. Derech, Gabe, or did I get it wrong? Right, but there's all this like modern behavioral economics says that a person will usually end up, they'll be willing to receive less, but won't be willing to pay, right? Because there's like this psychological inequality or invariance, between willing to sacrifice and willing to pay and willing to forego. Right? Does this sound familiar?
Yeah. Also super explicitly by payments for tsar in Perek Chovel.
Yeah.
Very psychologically perceptive.
So. Yeah. How much would you pay to not feel the pain or like right, or versus the other formulation, which is
how much would someone want to receive to get the pain, the pain yeah. option, and then exactly. say who would ever want that.
Right. So the Rishonim sometimes assume that these numbers all converge. And it's an interesting question here also, and the Ravid gives us this formula, Kama Adam Rotel Litain Velo Yitrach Liknos Behemos Yafos Ke'ela. So it's like, how much would you pay to avoid the tircha of going to the marketplace? All right, so Rashi expresses it in the, like, how much will you actually forward and pay for this benefit? Interesting question to like look at those different cases and see the relationship between them. Okay, so this is a monster chiddush. Why is it a monster chiddush? So what's going on here? So Shmuel tells us, Shmuel, so what happens here? So the animals are worth $200. It's going to cost you $200 to save them. What's the Ravid's view?
How much? So if he would pay, I don't know, an extra $10, let's say, to not have to go to the market and buy new ones, then the person who was poshia has to pay $10.
Yeah. So the Ravid's chiddush here seems to be that there's pshia on the intangible value, right? Or on the liability of the shomer is now on the transaction costs that he's imposing on the Baal HaBayis, right? So there's a full wash on the shomer would have, the Baal HaBayis would have been out $200 to save the animals anyway. But because he failed to watch them, the Baal HaBayis now has to incur these extra transaction costs. So the shomer is going to be liable for those costs, correct? Yeah, everybody with me? Shmuel, you want to say something?
So what's unclear to me, his lashon seems to be that that's only on that case. It does, he doesn't seem to think it in every case that intangible value is relevant.
Oh, it's interesting. If we only care about the it seems like if we only care about the intangible value case when it's a full wash on the actual value.
Right, which doesn't make so much intuitive sense to me.
Oh. This is the problem that everybody raises in this sugya, which is mimamshach. If kushra d'chiyusa, and what's the other phrase the Gemara uses? Tircha.
Tircha.
Yeah. Tircha yusersa. Right? I'm just going to use the word transaction costs. If the transaction costs are considered to be part of the nezek, then they should be part of the Nasdaq in any event, in any case, right? You should pay, in a standard case, you should pay the $200 of the behemoth plus the transaction costs that the Nizak incurs. And if it's not considered value, then it shouldn't be a value, shouldn't be considered even in this type of case, right? Where Yatsaskar Behefsedo. So it's kind of strange that the Ravid here introduces this whole notion of transaction costs as part of the shomer's liability. Evan, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, just to clarify, in the second case, he would be paying the value of the animal or the flock plus transaction costs, or just the transaction?
According to the Ravid, just the transaction costs, because the animals are worth 200. The owner would have paid 200 to reimburse the shomer for saving them. So that's a wash. So what's the nezek on? Oh, the nezek is just on the extra transaction costs of having to schlep around the marketplace to purchase new ones.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think of the Ravid's second chiddush here? Bishalim lo ha'omeg. What do you think? Chiddush, not a chiddush, I mean, problem. Yakir, you have a thought on it?
I mean, there are a lot of things here that are unknown to me. It's not clear to me. I guess this is part of what we'll be exploring in the sugya, whether transaction costs are generally going to be considered throughout Dina Momonos cases, which will affect whether this is a chiddush. Part of the motivation here might be that the Ravid's uncomfortable with a duty to be shomer without without any monetary repercussion. So he has to invent or dig up some chiyuv mamun to go along with it, because it's clear from the Gemara that there is a duty to be shomer in this case. Which I think ties into discussions we had a few months ago.
Yeah. Shmuel, on the other hand?
Yeah, just going back to the Lashon of the Gemara, it's a little bit problematic because the Gemara said you pay up until Demay the original value. It doesn't say pay up until the original value plus, I don't know, until a dollar before what he would pay for this tircha. So to expand it the way the Ravid is seems to sort of be incongruous with that.
Very sharp diet. You're saying, let's say the transaction costs are worth $20, right? So it should always be, you should have a chiv hatzala up until the value plus $19.
Right.
Because even if there's like a marginal benefit, that should be, and it's just strange that the Gemara here is assuming like in terms of like the whole Krisha Diffusa. But a la what I was saying before, I would say, in the same way that chayiv is ambiguous, you might say once the Gemara throws in kushu dechiyusa, maybe there could be a benefit of miktsas kushu dechiyusa, right? Like as long as you're saving a shavu pruta worth of transaction costs, maybe the maskana that would be sufficient, right? But yeah, it's an interesting idea. Sakaria?
I agree with a lot of what Yathir said, that maybe a lot of this is about, there's an obligation, that it's not obvious that there's a monetary liability behind it. But something to note, the Ravid only says you pay this amount. Let's say whatever the transaction costs are $20. He says you only pay those $20 if the cost of the service was the cost of the whole flock. As if you're not paying anything else for the flock, then you'll pay the transaction costs. But if you if you're paying $1 for the flock, you won't pay any of the transaction costs. And it doesn't exist in the presence of the other mammon, which kind of makes it sound like this might be just some sort of either like policy or like incentive to save the sheep, just for the sake of the Baal HaBayis, when, really monetarily might not make as much sense, but just for his benefit.
Very interesting. So I think what you're saying is that this last part of the Ravid, of Yishalim Lo HaOmed, is not Bitoras Mamon. It's more Bitoras, like, I'll just use the word Knas, to incentivize the Shomer to save the animals. Right, so he shouldn't be lazy and say, I'd rather not have the headache of forwarding the money, et cetera, et cetera. We knas him the Dmei Omei just to give him a financial incentive to do the proper shmira. I think it's a really sharp idea. What do you guys think? That's a really good suggestion. So the chiddush here is that this is not a mamon dika tashlumin, it's a knas type of tashlumin. I think that's really good. It's a really nice theory.
I think it makes sense for number one, just linguistically, he says the imoso skar ola kadei demand. It's strictly in that case. And number two, this is exactly the case where the shomer has the least incentive to defend the flock, right? Because he would have to front the maximum amount of money, and he's saving the minimum amount of money, right? So maybe that's what's going on here.
Yeah. Again. All right, great. So let me just take a minute here just to round out the Ramban's. So the Ramban here in this cryptic comment in Tzadik Gimel Amud Beis quotes both things of the Ravid. He says, "Near the Shomer Safar Shaila Kadim Barom of Makos Biskar Velo Kidem Inam Ashali Maskula Ela Menachim Lo Skaran." So there's just some interesting discussion here whether this tzarachian goes back on the whole thing or just in the last line in the Ramban. the point being about the separability of the two parts of the Ravid. So the way some Achronim read the Ramban is that the Ramban is all in on the Menachin Lo Scharan theory of the Ravid, but he's Tzarech Iyun on the just paying the Dmei Kusha HaBehema theory, which makes a lot of sense, right? Because they're really two separate Chidushim in the Ravid, and there's no reason to think that one depends on the other, right? So the point is that the second Chiddush is much more novel than the first Chiddush. The second Chiddush is saying that there are times when the value of the Nezek could be valued at just the transaction costs that the Bialim is going to incur. That the Ramban is on the fence about. But with respect to Menachem Lo Dmei HaBehema, the Ramban is all in on that theory. So I think that's just an important point to show how the two parts of the Ravid are separable. Gabe, this background is much better now. We don't see glaring lights and all the fogginess has cleared, so much better.
You must be feeling better.
So my Tylenol kicked in, right? Okay. Now, the Mishnah Melech comments on this back and forth here, very important comment. He quotes the Ramban, he quotes the Magen Mishnah as citing the Ramban as being besafik about the whole thing. Okay. But he disagrees, right? And the Mishnah Melech has a tiyak of al ze'ein of b'mashma dibre Ramban. He says the Ramban is pshitole de menachin haskar. But he's mesupak about the Ravid's second Chiddush. Why is he mesupak about the Ravid's second Chiddush? What's the key line?
He says these things of kosher de behema are not gufa mamon.
Yeah.
So how could you hold the shomer liable for them?
And that's the million-dollar question, right? If these transaction costs or whatever are just like intangible values, they're not actionable in Beis Din or B'dinei Adam, then the shomer should never be chayiv to pay them, and the Bialim should never be able to recover them. And he says, that's gufa why the Ramban is besafik about it. The Ramban's besafik about why something that's ain gufa mamon should be recoverable, where generally it's not recoverable. Okay, and that's why he says the Ramban would just read the Gemara, or the suffik is at least when the Gemara says ad kedei demei damav, is only with respect l'inyan shechayiv min adin lasos lo sheyishalim kusher debeima. Why maker adin he should have a chiyiv to save up until their value, right? Now Zachariah has a nice answer to it. I think Zachariah's answer is that in a Hanami, all the Gemara shows is that it's a chiyuv because the Bialim saves kosher dechiyusa, but we want to incentivize the shomer, so we knasin by paying that amount in order to incentivize him to exercise this type of shmir, right? So it's a nice, I think Zachariah, that's like a nice way of, satisfying the pashtus and the Gemara with the Ravid's Chiddush. Yeah. Now, I want to move forward with this idea, this objection of the Mishnah Melech, that this value is ein gufa mamon and therefore not recoverable. So, did anybody have a chance to prepare this marshal, this Chochmas Shlomo that we have on the Gemara here at Tzadi Gimel on the bottom of page 36? Short little marshal. Yeah. So take us through the marshal's Karya.
So, okay, so he thinks, so Nimtzvetzido in Kain, Mashma Mehacha, Shezehu Chasha Mamon. So he deduces from this somehow, he thinks that this Gemara proves that these are considered Mamon.
Yeah, Kvodo Bimkoma Munach, I mean, this is a very bad diak from the Marshal. Mela, if you want to be Medaik from the Ravid, it's true, right? Maybe from the Ravid you can Medaik, that's considered Gufa Mamon. But all the Gemara was trying to do, as the Mishnah Melech pointed out, is to explain why it's a rational rule to require the balabayas to reimburse the shomer up to the value of the behemoths. Right? So I don't know what this imkain mashma miyach is that chashur mamon. It's not true that everything that's rational for the balabayas to do is considered mamon, unless the marshal is a really sophisticated economist, like classical economist here, right? So
right, I mean, like maybe the marshal is playing like 5D chess over here, and he's saying like, listen, maybe the only kind of obligations you can hold a shomer to our monetary ones.
Right,
so,
right.
Like,
or even sharper, he's saying, look, economists know that value is just about preference ranking. And so if there's a, right, if it's rational for you to want to save the animals, then that shows that there's guf mamon involved. Like, we just define mamon as like the, like what losses you're willing to take, et cetera, et cetera. Gabe, you should like, you know? Yeah. So either very sophisticated economics here or just a poor reading of the Shaka Vitaria.
It was just written on the side of his Gemara. It was Nimtza B'Tzi, though. You know, you can't.
Right.
I don't know if he told anyone to put it in a safer. Okay. Vim Kane, my parech Barisha Maniach, where Yehuda, the low Abedino and Ashe, the Lekab Seda, Mishor Mua. So we'll go into that case in a little bit, but pretty much implies that you should let your shore get killed and you'll just collect the paycheck. There's no other loss. There's no Seda involved by just letting your shore get killed and getting Nezek Shalom. Hello, Mikol Mako, Mikab Seda, the Kushra Dechiusa, Vichachi Seda. But you are losing out because, of course, you're not going to get paid the kushra dechiusa chechi seira if your shore gets killed. So you are, every time you every time nezek happens, or let's say some animal get killed, the nezek actually doesn't get paid the full amount.
Excellent. So he points. Marshall thinks there's a stira between the implication of the Gemara on Sadi Gimel and the Gemara Bava Kamma on Chav Zayin. We paskin. Or at least this, the working assumption of that Gemara is that a person can do Avid Inish Dino Lenafshe, he can take self-help measures if he is going to suffer a loss by waiting for Bezdin to get involved. Okay? But if he's not going to suffer any loss, then he has a chiv to wait for the Bezdin to get involved because he'll be made whole at the end of the day through the court system. So you can't have these self-help, can't take self-help measures when you won't suffer a loss through waiting for the courts. In the context of that Gemara, the Gemara in Chav Zayin says, so you can see, Heichad Yikab Seda, Kul Yamo Plugi David Yitinu Mavshe. In the context of that Gemara, the Gemara tells us, the Gemara has a case, Tashma.
Yeah, so
first
of all, Gabe Chaver Lahargo, so the Mazik Shore mounts the Nizak Shore and is about to kill it. Ubo bal tachton v'shamat et shimet et shalol v'nafal elgun v'meis pater. So the bottom shore takes the shore out and the top shore falls down and dies. So the bal hatachton is pater.
Yeah.
So my la b'muad like
upseda. So the Gemara is trying to figure out, does this prove that you could do self-help even when you're not going to suffer a loss, or is this a case where you were going to suffer a loss? So what's the Gemara say?
Right, so what case are we dealing with? Maybe we're dealing with where the mazik, the top shore, was a muad, and you would have collected nezek shalim if you had just let it kill it. And therefore, there's no seda, and you, if you had just waited for the nezek to happen, and yet we still allow you to pull out the tachton.
So therefore, the implicit assumption, the Gemara is assuming if it's a short time, so we understand why you could take self-help measures, because you're going to lose 50% of the collection. Because tam is mashan chatzi nezek. But if it's a short muad, it's lekab seda, so you should have to wait for the Dayanim and the Bezin to get involved. So the Marshal has this very sharp question. He says, how could the Gemara say that there's lack of Pseida? According to the Gemara in Sadi Gimel, there's Pseida and the Kushra Dichiyusa and Tircha Yisera. Right? The transaction cost should be a sufficient reason not to accept the check from the Bezin and to be able to prevent the damage from happening ex ante. Very sharp point from the Marshal, right?
I think this question stands even without his dia.
Yeah, you don't need a cluster of mammon, right?
Right, as in once you say that it's either pseudo or even just shum hana labailim, I don't know, that's like the Avid Inish Dino Lenafshe question, but like once you say that there's a real substantial difference to the bailim, whether they save it themselves or they wait for Bastin to get the paycheck, you know, I don't know, I still think that should be enough to move the needle on Avid Inish.
I agree. I think the Marshal should have just focused on like this Pseida question rather than like the Chashuv Mamon question, right? I agree. But what we should take away from the Marshal is this interesting diuk that there are these inconsistencies between different areas of halacha about whether Kusha Dichiyusa, whether transaction costs are legally significant, right? Now, another Achron makes this point. You can look at the Nesivis here in Shin Gimel Ches. Hariza Poshev Chayev is quoting the Shulchan Aruch, quoting the Rambam, in our case, where you don't spend the money. He quotes the tour. Some reason he has like the Shitos backwards. The tour quotes the Shita of the Ravid, and the Prisha quotes the Shita of the Ravid. That Imhayat Tzarach Litin the Paul of Deme Kal Behema Tzarach Lahaksu Labayim Deme Tircha Liknos Abehema. So you, in a case where the cost of saving equal the cost of the animal, you just pay the transaction cost value. And he says, "Uba emes timuin." So who saw Tzchari? You saw the Nesivis, or so? What is objection? His objection is along the lines of the Marshal. What does he say?
So he says, "Emes timuin devar tor afil listim mezuyin the gazlan eno chayim d'shalim raktene shavya v'lo yosef." He says, "We don't find any other character, any other person who has to pay full tashlumin ever having to pay for." The tircha, even the most flagrant gazlan doesn't have to pay for the tircha; they just pay the shovi. And here, you seem to be mechayev in the shomer even more than that.
Yeah, so this is a really strong objection, right? So why suddenly in Bava Metzia Tzadi Gimel is the Gemara worried about the meishavi behema? If this is real mammon, the Gemara should make every ganav pay in addition to the keren, the market value of the item. He should have to pay for the headache of. The headache of purchasing a new one, training a new one, et cetera, et cetera. Gabe, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, curious what you think about this intuition, which Yekir wasn't convinced of. Could you see a chilek between the world of Nezikim and the world of Shomerim in that like the Shomer has like a contractual relationship with the Behema, which might be sort of broader in scope than the world of Nezik? Nezik is sort of very limited to strict Shovi, whereas you may consider the achrayas of the shomer to be a little broader.
Oh, so I want to say something along those lines, Gufa. A little different from the way you're saying it. You seem to be painting it in terms of like the level of responsibility, right? It's like a more defined responsibility. It's contractual. I want to say a little differently, but to explain the same, to get the same point that you're getting at, just I think Yakir will be on board for my hesber, even if he's not convinced by your hesber. So I want to say it like this, and I'll to explain why maybe Dafka and Sadi Gimel the Shomer is Chayev for these this special Kusha Dechiyusa these values. So somebody told me, I think Chaim Seiman told me this. So if he's wrong, we're going to blame it on him. So he told me that in American law, there's generally, I mean, this I know to be true separately. In American law, there's generally a presumption against making the loser in a court case pay the winning party's attorney's fees. Okay. The party's just like, you know, the plaintiff pays for his costs, the defendant pays for his attorney's costs. We don't make the loser pay unless there's some agreement, whatever, but generally we don't. Except in one area of law, there's a presumption that the loser pays. And that's when somebody sues their insurance company. There, the assumption is that the insurance company always has to cover the legal fees. What's pshat? Somebody want to say pshat and why this is true? Because the reason why somebody gets insurance is to not have to have the headache of suing the mazik and like trying to recover damages, right? Like you get insurance to like avoid like the mess of having to like sue the guy and like fight for your money back. So like when the insurance company puts up a fight and loses, like it's implied that they have to cover your attorney's fees because like it defeats the whole purpose of having insurance if you have to fight with the insurance company to get reimbursed. It's a good svara, no? I think there's something there. So I want to say maybe that's what's going on in our case. For similar reasons to what Gabe is saying. When you have a mazik, stam, a guy comes and destroys your stuff, or a ganav, he's mazik you by taking away the thing. And the default in halacha is that you're entitled to get the thing back or to get back its equivalent value. But when it comes to a shomer, the whole reason why you appoint a shomer is to make sure that nothing bad happens to the thing, right? Like his whole job is like to protect it so that you don't have the headache of having to deal with its loss and what happens if it's stolen or destroyed. So like maybe like dafka in a case of a shomer, where he's entrusted to protect the thing and to like save you from the headache of having to deal with its loss, it makes sense to hold him liable for like the transaction costs associated with the headache of having to replace the thing and you know, things like that. Gabe, does that make sense? That's along the lines that you're suggesting, I think, with like an added level of explanation.
Yeah, I like the work. It's nice to see.
You like it, Gabe? Okay, now we have to ask Yakir what he thinks about it. Right? We have to, you know, the healer or other, we have to see what he's going to say. Yakir, what do you think?
I'll have to think more about it, but it sounds good to start.
Oh, okay. It sounds good to start. You know, it's giving us like a Sarasimi Chuva to convince him that the shot is MS. Great. Good. Thoughts on this? I think it's a nice little hezber, right? You guys have thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'll share it at the Shabbos table.
You're saying it's like it's just like Shabbos table material, or it's...
No, on the rabbit. It's so good that it's just so, it's reached like the simple truth. Like no one could deny it.
Good, good, good. That's what I want to hear. You know, like you start on the Gnai, you start on the Shvach, but if it's Shabbos table.
Right, it depends who's Shabbos table, you know.
Yeah, I don't know what you share at your Shabbos table. But
yeah, when you're at the Rosenthal's, you know, it's only the top quality. Right.
The creme de la creme, right.
That's right.
All right, great. So let's. So I think that's one way of trying to solve this objection that the Achronim have. Why don't we care about Kusha D'Chiyusa in these other cases? Let me just say one more point. Actually, getting back to Zachariah's earlier point, if this theory is correct, then maybe you would say, coming back to the Ravid's initial formulation. It's possible that you would pay the kushra d'chiyusa even in cases where you're also paying the market value of the animals. See, the way Zachariah was reading the Ravid before is that it's exclusively in a case where the cost of saving them runs up the entire value of the behema that you would pay the omdin kama adam. There's a way of reading the Ravid that maybe in this last line, he really just means the only time that you exclusively pay the Dmei Kushra is when there's an offset of the value of the items themselves. But it's quite possible that even in a standard case, he would concede that you pay the market value plus the transaction costs in Shomrim cases. And that would work out nicely with my explanation, if that's the case. Whereas on Zachariah's explanation, that this is just like an incentive to get him to do Shmira in cases where he doesn't have external incentive by the Chiyav Mamon, then you'd only pay the Dmei Kushra in cases where there's no other Tashlumin to be paid, right? But according to my theory, it makes sense that the Dmei Kushra should be factored in a lot of Shomrim cases, and we distinguish between Shomrim cases and Nezikin cases. And also, you know, Geneva cases would be like Nezikin cases. Okay. The last major source here that I wanted to cover is this Dvar Avram, Chelek Aleph Siman Tes. Complicated Dvar Avram. I don't know if anybody had a chance to read through the important parts here. So let me just tell you the highlights. So basically, the Dvar Avram wants to know, what's the nature of the chiyuv to reimbursing the shomer for the cost of saving the animals? And he says the following. He says, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. He says, yesh lachkor. Is basically the hakira that we raised at the beginning today. Why is it that the Ravid thinks, or why is it the Gemara sees value in the Kushra D'Chiyusa? So option number one is that the Kushra D'Chiyusa is not considered Hatzalas Mamon. It's just the value of the animal itself that's considered shivoy mamon or valuable. But the kusha dechiyusa is not einzeh shivoy beguf hachefetz atzmo, ela chavivusa bilechud legabe habaylim. All it is like a certain sense of affinity that the Bailam has. And it doesn't factor into the actual value of the animals. It's just giving, the Gemara is just giving a reason why it's rational for the Baal HaBayis to want to spend this amount to save his stuff. Because that extra chavivusa, that sense of warmness that he has with his own possession. O Dilma, this is option number two. B'chi Aigavna Nami Chayev Lava. D'shema kushra d'chiyusa haveshivoy beguf hadavar atzmo. And this is like the Marshal's diak, I guess, in the Gemara. And maybe the added value is now considered to be internal to the value of the object. Ela she'eno shivoy l'chol olam kenimkar bashuk. Because it doesn't get factored into the market value because other people don't get this benefit. But vis-a-vis the Bailim, this does factor into the internal value of the item. Everybody see that? That's the chakira of the Dvar Avram. Okay. Now, he throws out a suggestion here in his analysis. Let me just skip to it. So he says, oh, maybe this is considered internal value, blah, 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 like the second side. And look what he says. Af lefi ze yotze lan davar chadash, divimazik, vigazlan nami, shamin dme kushra, kivan shehu shivu ishal guf hachepes, uhu davar chadash. Pretty interesting. So I think what he's saying, I think he's basically entertaining here that he's willing to bite the bullet and say on the basis of Bav Mitzia Tzadi Gimel, we have to reevaluate Tashlumin in Kol HaTorah Kula. And in a chanami, maybe in Kol HaTorah Kula, in addition to paying the market value Shiva Yachefetz, you should also pay the Dmei Kushra and the Dmei Tircha. Pretty wide, pretty radical and important halachic conclusion on the basis of the sugya. So he's saying there's no difference between our case and other cases. And in a chanami, we should factor this into the value in other cases. Gabe, you have a hand on this?
I wonder if I didn't read this inside, but I wonder if he's making a bigger chiddush when he says shehu shivoy shel guf hachefetz. He doesn't think this is a secondary cost being imposed upon the gazlan. Rather, he thinks this is included in the value of the animal.
Oh, yeah, that's a sharper way of putting it. So the idea is, you know, whenever the Gemara says that you pay the market value, we shouldn't just look at the market value of what people are willing to pay. We should factor in the benefits, the intangible value for the Baal HaBayis. Correct, Gabe?
Yeah.
I think that's a really good point. So we'd have to, this is a very soto stick of chiddush in how we calculate Tashlumin and Kol HaTorah Kula. Everybody agree? Yeah. So that's a radical chiddush to conclude from our Gemara. But he recognizes that this is a chiddush. He says, "V'hu davar chadash." So he recognizes that, and so he says, "You know, maybe al kein nira yoser nachon that kusher dichiyusa is not considered shivoy beguf hadavar, and therefore in a chanami in general we would not factor it into gazla and a mazik's duty to compensate." And our sugya is different. So why is our sugya different? So he says, he offers the following theory. I think this is good analysis. And this gets back to the way I was explaining the Rambam Shita to defend it from Gabe's criticism that the Ravid's view is so pasha. So what does he say? So just take a look at this and we'll conclude here. Basically he says that there are two dinim in this Tashlumen, in the Ravid's theory. Number one, is the shomer's liability for the object itself. Okay? So the $200 value of the animal. But number two, there's masha hamafkid chozeru mishalim le l'shomer domim dekamishtar shile. The duty of the bailim to remunerate the shomer for the benefit that the shomer conferred upon him by spending money to save his item. You see that? So with respect to the damage, so one is damages owed from the shomer to the baalim. That's the value of the behemos, the $200. But then there's a totally separate thing going on here, and that's the baalim's owner, the baalim's liability to the shomer for the hana that the shomer conferred upon him by saving his item through spending money on the roim and maklos. Does everybody see that? Yeah. So in other words, this sugya is really just the Ravid Shita is a combination of Hilchos Shomrim and Hilchos Yorid. And they're just two separate chiyuvim in the sugya. So vihine, b'tashlumin harishonim, with respect to the shomer's liability to the baalim, shashomer mishalim l'mafgid, b'ames lo shayich l'hachnis gam shivoy kusha d'chiyusa. Dize eino shivoy b'gufa chepetz. Ulam b'tashlumim hashniim, shahamafgid chuzer mishalim l'shomer, maidikam mishtar shile, shayich kvar inyan hashivoy shal kusha d'chiyusa. Okay. So he wants to distinguish between these two components and say the net damages here is not really net damages. The shomer has to pay full damages, which is just offset by the counter payment of the hana that the baalim has to pay the shomer. Everybody see, everybody get a sense of what he's saying? Yeah. Thoughts on this? Think about it. I mean, maybe it just makes sense to think about this and look at the formulation here a little more closely. And then we can talk about it together once everyone has a chance to see it inside. Does that make sense? But that's the general move that he's trying to make. So it's interesting just to think about the nafgamina between this suggestion and the suggestion that was made earlier that this is like a, like, the Ravid's view offsetting damages is grounded in a conception of net nezek. What's the nezek? What's the poshea kemazek amount that the shomer damaged? Versus the Dvar Avram's theory here that no, the damages is on the guf hadavar, but there's a separate chiyuv shekein nene owed back from the baalim to the shomer for the benefit that was conferred. And then there's just like an accounting offset between these two different types of obligations. All right. So let's stop here. You guys take a quick look at the Dvar Avram inside for next time. And then I'm not going to spend really time. We'll talk a little bit more about this next Chabura. And then I'll mention very quickly some discussions in the Mavriya Chari discussion here. Why is our sugi different from Mavriya Chari? Don't get lost in these big tosasin. So you can just look at the underlying sections that are important. You don't have to get lost in the Mavriya Chari sugya. And then I want to talk a little bit about the Runya discussion on Tzadi Gimel Amid Beis, bottom of page 44. And then after that, we'll move into the Sofer and Shomer Sachar relationship. All right? Great. Shkoyach, everybody. Enjoy the blue and white cookies.
I just want to know, I think the biggest takeaway from today's Chabura is Beis Din has female interns.
What? That's what you took out of today's Chabura? That's an important takeaway, Gabe. It's true. All right, shkoyach, everybody. And we'll pick up on Tuesday. Shkoyach. God, we ended early, you know. L'chvod Yom Ha'atzmaut. All right.
So hey, we're going to go say hello in the next 6 minutes again.
That's right. We'll see you later, guys. Take care. Yeah, sure.